Hey Alexa, what's the definition of hustle?
To be aggressive, especially in business or other financial dealings.
You're listening to the H for Hustle podcast, designed to inspire future entrepreneurs to take the leap from working for someone else to pursue their passions and side hustles and turning them into full-fledged businesses. My name is Jerome Fenton. I'm a serial entrepreneur. Every week, I'll be speaking with an entrepreneur that has taken that leap. We'll be talking about the lessons they've learned and how they've turned their passions and side hustles into full-fledged businesses. H for Hustle Podcast, welcome back. Another illustrious episode up ahead. On today's episode, we have Christian Straka. He is the co-founder of Mindsize, and he's also the global mindset coach for Adidas and all the Adidas runners. And we had a very great conversation about mindset and how to have a better mindset. And we go into his system of how he developed this mindset, and he gives us a little sneak peek of what that actual system is, and he goes into breaking it down. I'll give you a little background on Christian. He was a professional tennis player for years, and after having just a slew of injuries, he decided to become a coach. And after coaching amateurs and professionals, he realized that the thing that's going to take the most players over the edge wasn't just their physicality, but it was their mindset. And with that, he came up with this system. And it was a phenomenal conversation with Christian. I'm not going to waste too much time. Let's get into it right now. Boom.
I mean, I started off as an athlete myself. I was a tennis player from when I was 4 years old. I started, and then I spent most of my life just playing tennis, trying to be a pro, becoming a pro, and then having to quit because of an injury. I had a shoulder surgery, and then I started coaching very early, like in my early 20s, which is
tennis coaching.
Generally young. Yeah, like a young age for starting to coach, if you're playing, because most people play a little longer. Mm-hmm. And then if they have to stop playing, then a lot of times actually they move, you know, maybe they go back to college if they start kind of have to quit at my age. Mm-hmm.
What made you want to go into coaching instead of just like saying, you know what, I was a failed athlete, let me just go do something else? What made you still stay around the sport? Because some people tend to not stay around the sport.
My mentor. Okay. He who was coaching me to play. I was living in Spain at the time for 5-6 years already. And he was my coach. And then when I had to stop, his suggestion was that I should try to coach. He thought I might, you know, be good at it and enjoy it. And I had never thought of that in my life one single second until that moment.
Most athletes don't.
Coaching, I don't know. If I think about like coaching myself, like that would not be when I was younger. So, but then I was like, yeah, why not? Like I was a little unsure. And then who knew? Like it's really one of the things that I enjoy most in my life.
Got it. Do you think you enjoy it better than being an athlete? I mean, granted, your athlete life was a little shorter than, I guess, your coaching life could be. Yeah, so do you think it's...
I mean, I do enjoy it more, but it's not because the activity itself is not enjoyable, but because now I have developed certain abilities and skills that allow me to better deal with unpleasant experiences. Had I had those skills as an athlete, I would have enjoyed tennis even more. And I was loving tennis. I'm not saying I'm enjoying coaching more than playing, just because of the activity is not as nice. It's just because of my subjective experiences. When I got anxious, when I got nervous, when I was not motivated, like I had no framework whatsoever how to deal with that. I just was like mind over, matter, so to speak. And a lot of times it was matter over mind, unfortunately. And
and then you got beat by the sport pretty much.
Yeah, exactly.
So was there one specific client where you're like, I'm trying my best, I'm training them, but it's just not connecting, that made you, I guess, switch into the mindfulness practice or focus more on the mind, not just the physicality? Because physicalness is one part, but the mindset and the mindfulness is another thing.
No, it was not just one person. It was really, it started with my own experience over 20 years of, okay, or 17 years or whatever it was, of playing and seeing what my struggles were, where I, what skills I was lacking, you know, how to deal with being nervous. What can you do? Like, how can you improve that ability to play at your optimal level, even though you're nervous? Okay. Or if you're not able to focus, like, what can you do to be able to focus again? And what does it even mean to be focused?
Yeah.
Right. In a moment. It's like, people is like, am I paying attention to my breath for 1 hour? Is that focus? Like, yeah, but like, will that help when you play tennis? Like,
no,
definitely not. Right. So, because I started to see then this same kind of, these same challenges in all of the athletes that I was training as a coach, I was like, it didn't matter if they're, you know, top 10 in the world, or if they are just good professionals, or have potential to be a professional but can't make it, or they're amateurs that play for fun. There were a lot of times people that I was coaching that were very successful entrepreneurs, mm-hmm, that had these mental skills much further developed than like some of the great athletes that I was training.
Got it.
Just because of their mindset and how they were developing those skills over the years.
Got it.
So then once I started to see that is kind of like the reason that will decide whether they are able to perform at their optimal level or not, right? Because the optimal level kind of is dictated theoretically by what you can do physically, what you know strategically, what you need to do, what is your stamina, what is your technical skill level. Okay, so you have those levels. Let's say they're at the peak, okay, one of the best in the world. If you can't pay attention to what matters, or you get nervous and like you start trembling, like it doesn't matter how good your technical and
because your physical is gone because your mind isn't there to hold.
Exactly, exactly. So the mental abilities don't allow you to do things that your body can't do, that you don't understand how to do. If you don't understand what strategy to use, it doesn't matter how much you can focus. What the focus, your ability to be cool with challenges, and your ability to really notice the most acute and important details for what you're doing, will allow you to do what you're already able to do at the very best. It doesn't allow you to do things that you haven't learned to do yet. Right?
Got it. It's like that extra level, that gear, that sixth gear that you need to get into. Is that's where the mentalness kind of kicks in.
I mean, I don't know. I think I would say it's like, in order for you to be able to take advantage of all the time and work that you have put in to develop these skills, these physical skills, technical skills, and strategical skills, the mind is the last instance that will either allow you to do it a little bit, a lot, or fully.
Got it.
You can see that with, you know, a lot of pro athletes, but not only athletes, of course, any human being, that sometimes you feel like, wow, they're so good. And like they just can't do it. I know how good they are, like when we are by ourselves, and what are they doing right now? Like they have the skill and they can't really recall it in this moment. So that's what we were talking about. Right?
So you keep on mentioning these specific skills that you've seen in entrepreneurs, that you've seen in top athletes. What are those skills? What is the thing that they've developed a little bit better than everyone else? What's those skills that would you say, if you could, like, I guess, coin them?
So it's basically a set of three skills that are like at the foundation of everything. So these skills would be, first, your ability to pay attention to whatever you want. And in the moment when you need to perform, when you need to speak to, when you need to pitch something, when you need to talk to the board of directors, when you're serving at breakpoint at a big tournament, when you're throwing a free throw in the NBA finals, like you need to be able to pay attention to what you need to do right now, independent of anything that's happening.
Okay.
And what you need to pay attention to might be not just one thing for a long time. It could be, but it could be, I need to pay attention to this for 2 seconds. Like, let's say you're in the room of directors and you need to listen to this one person. He's saying something, and then you need to move your attention to the next person. And then you need to move your attention. So this ability to pay attention to whatever you want could be for 1 second, and then you just move your attention, or it could be for 1 minute to this, right? It could be something that you hear and see externally. Yeah. It could be something you feel or something that's going through your mind.
Got it.
Whatever it is.
Right? Paying attention.
Yes. So, well, it's directing your attention and keeping your attention for how long you need it to be there.
Okay.
Okay. So let's just call that concentration.
Okay.
Then the second skill is your ability to, when you have directed your attention, okay, let's say right now you're directing your attention to me. And when you're directing your attention to me, you could direct your attention to a lot of things to me. You could pay attention to what I'm saying, right? So you're paying attention to listening, okay? But you're listening to me. You're not listening to maybe if I'm snipping my fingers, right? It's a different sound.
Yeah.
So you need to keep listening to my voice and not this, okay? Yeah. It's in the same sense category. So when you are now able to notice details in that, in the experience that you're perceiving, so you're able to notice the content of what I'm saying, right? You're understanding the story. Or you might be noticing that my I have an accent, or you are noticing that my voice is getting louder and more silent. Those are details you can notice. So you can generally categorize those details. You can notice content, you can notice location, you can notice where it is something that you're experiencing. You can notice size, is something big or small. You can notice whether something is moving or static. You can notice whether something is pleasant or unpleasant. So when you notice those details, then you are tracking in real time what you are experiencing, what you are paying attention to. You're not tracking it.
Got it.
So this tracking skill is a skill that you can develop to a crazy degree. And that's what a lot of professionals or like very skilled individuals have developed in their particular situations.
Field, yeah.
So these skills are task specific. So that skill we call clarity. You could people describe it as awareness, presence, being in the moment, and so forth, right? It's all same. It's just you're really tracking in real time what it is that you are paying attention to.
And being having the ability to be in it while you're in it and focus on whatever those things are just for the moment that you're in them.
Yes. Well, I mean, that depends a little bit. Yes and no, because you could also, you can change and direct what you pay attention to and how big it is, right? So if you now pay attention to what I'm saying, that's one thing, but you can also pay attention to what I'm saying and my facial expressions. So now you're paying attention to two things at the same time. Okay. So it's not just one little thing. Okay.
It's the whole thing.
Or you could pay attention. It is what matters. It's what you choose.
Okay, got it.
If you know that you can choose, you can start to choose.
Okay?
If you don't know you have this ability to direct your attention to something, then the chances are high that you're not going to use it very often, and you're going to use it like sporadically and unintentionally. You're still using this skill to direct your attention, but you're like not planning to do it.
Got it. And you don't have the control of it. And the goal is to learn the control aspect of what you want to pay attention to when.
The goal is to leverage those skills that you have already in the moment, right? Goal number one. And goal number two is to improve those skills over time.
Got it.
And the improvement only happens if you use those skills in a systematic and consistent way. It's like, I always give the example of like running. Most people that are physically healthy, they can walk and they can run. And the older you get, let's exclude people that are maybe, you know, more towards their 60s, 70s, 80s. Let's just say until you're 40. Okay. You walk and run more. You're, however, not getting fitter. Nobody who is just walking, to the bathroom and to the kitchen and to the restaurant and to work, but they just walk. Nobody will get fitter, even though you're using the skill of walking and sometimes running all the time, every day. Only when you start to train your ability to walk and run in a systematic and consistent way.
Yeah. Okay.
Then will you be able to start to run faster? You will able to start to run longer, and you will able to leverage those improved skills. Yeah. And they will benefit you in other situations in your life. All of a sudden, you're walking up the stairs with your groceries to the fifth floor, and now you're not as tired anymore all of a sudden.
Because one part of it is intentional. You've decided to focus on that specifically. Because like you said, everyone can walk and everyone can run, but now you're focusing it with a system and consistently you're creating the extra level. Okay, cool.
You need a game plan. If you just like walk around all day, like
nothing,
as you know, people don't get fitter, right? Yeah. And just because you direct your attention and you pay attention to something, like you can pay attention to your phone and to TikTok, but your attentional skills aren't improving because of that. Okay,
true. Very, very
it's
true.
The opposite.
Yeah.
And then you have the third skill, which is crucial, which is your ability to try to be equally open to pleasant, unpleasant, and neutral experiences. So it's like a third option in the middle between trying to suppress and avoid things that are unpleasant and trying to cling to things that are pleasant, that you like and want. So it's just like a matter of fact stance in the middle between those two. And you experience it, you perceive it. You might have an emotional reaction, right? You might have thoughts, feelings in the body, but how you act is now independent of how you feel.
And what do you call that one?
So that I call coolness.
Coolness,
but
okay.
Other synonyms for that would be equanimity, openness, acceptance, and so forth.
Got it. That's the tricky one, right? Like being able to identify a good emotion, a bad emotion, and being able to stay quite in the middle of knowing that these two things exist, right? Like I think that's what would separate like the good from the great, right? Like knowing that this sucks and this is great over here, but being able to stay in the middle of both, I think that's really tough to do.
I would kind of try to reframe good and bad into pleasant and unpleasant.
Okay, so pleasant and unpleasant. Okay,
because something that you consider bad is really just unpleasant, probably. Yeah. But something that's unpleasant can totally be good. If you change your perspective, if you reframe your perspective on something, let's say stress, okay? So when people are stressed, they generally tend to think it's bad and it's unpleasant, okay? And they don't want to be stressed, not realizing that stress can be leveraged and that stress, even though it is unpleasant, can be very beneficial for you. Short-term stress is actually fantastic.
Yeah.
Long-term stress, not so healthy, definitely, but short-term stress results in an increased sense of motivation to do or not do something. And if you can tap into that, realize that, oh, I can leverage this experience of stress to improve my behavior, right? It heightens my focus. It increases my motivation. Then you can use that for your own benefit.
Okay. So now the question I have for you is that you've coached, you know, numerous different people, tennis players, runners, the ones that are, I guess, average and the one that are above average, is it that they've just mastered those skills at a higher level than the most average players or runners?
I mean, it's a combo. I would not generalize.
Okay.
What I would say is that the top athletes in the world in any sport, they have these three skills developed to a very high degree.
Got it.
It is possible that there is an athlete that is average, let's just say whatever that means, and he has or she or them have those skills developed to a very high degree, but they have physical limitations of some kind.
Got it. Okay. I can understand.
The vast majority of time, however, if you get to the level of being a professional athlete, what kind of limits you from breaking through to the very top are those three skills and not your physical or strategical or technical skills.
Because technically everyone physically has it to be a professional. They're almost physically at the same level.
More people than not, would say. More Got people it. Than not. Yeah.
Got it. So the thing, so now developing those three skills, how does one build a system around developing that type of skill set?
Yeah, so that's where basically you need to combine two elements. One is just the intellectual process of understanding how these skills work, how they can benefit you, how to train them. There's not just these three skills. There's a lot of strategies and techniques that you also need to learn about in order to use those skills.
Got it.
Then, however, understanding all of this and knowing all of that is helpful and is very important, but it really only helps you if you then practice. So again, we draw the comparison to running or another skill, let's say swimming, okay, or tennis, it could be anything. If you understand perfectly what you need to do in order to swim, you understand the biomechanics, you can write a whole thesis about it, you understand everything about water until up to a molecular level, you know exactly how much you need to train, for what duration, how high your heart rate needs to be. You could intellectually, you could know everything about it. But if you have never swam, it doesn't matter how much you know.
Exactly.
You could have been learning this and write 5,000 pages about it for 5 years, mm-hmm. spent 10 hours a day thinking about this and conceptualizing it and refining it and doing something very relevant that might help a lot of people. But it's not going to help you to improve the skill of swimming.
Yeah, like, because you're not in the water. No matter how much knowledge exactly. you have about it, you exactly. still need the practice of everyday fundamentals.
And it's the same with the mental skills. So that's where the trick is, because people think they can think themselves into being able to focus better. And that is very, limited.
Yeah, because you still
practice.
You still do need the everyday practice of it.
You do need the practice. Exactly.
Got it.
You need to practice these three skills intentionally and at the same time together, not in isolation. Now we have good scientific evidence that shows that if you practice these three skills in isolation, they improve, but they don't improve as fast as if you practice them in combination.
Got it. Okay. It's almost like running and lifting and recovery. Like you need that the combination to make sense.
You can make that metaphor.
Got it. Now I can hear my audience. They're saying like, then how much of this is like environmental? Like let's say we have two athletes that are very much the same physically, but they're in different environments. Does that make any difference within their skill set rising from one to the other?
You mean the environment in regards to the location where they are,
or just
the people that are around them?
The people that are around them.
Yeah, I mean, that definitely has an impact from my opinion. I haven't seen any data on that.
Okay.
I would imagine there is data on that. Anything that I generally say, there are scientific studies about that. It's not like that you need to or should really believe anything that I say.
Yeah.
Instead of dismissing or believing, you kind of want to take a curious, like scientific approach, like, oh, that's interesting. Is that really true? Do your research. You do the research online or talk to other people, or and you can also do your research internally, like see whether that is true for you. Can you direct your attention? Can you pay attention to what I'm saying? And then when I slap my fingers, you pay attention to the golden rectangle behind me.
Yeah.
And then you know experientially, oh, that is true, what he just said, and not like, oh yeah, I just take it for granted what he's saying, you know?
Got it. So the reason why I want to have you on the show is because between me, sports and entrepreneurship runs a very close parallel, right? Like in sports, there's a score. In business, there's like money, and that's your score, right? Like you kind of define both sides. Do you think there is a mental approach that that entrepreneurs, the same mental approach that sports people take, entrepreneurs can take?
I think there's a lot of things that, where there's a lot of parallels between athletes and entrepreneurs.
Yeah,
for sure. One would be that most successful entrepreneurs that I have met, they need to prioritize. They need to do certain things, and they need to not do certain things in order to become successful with their business. And whatever success means, I mean, it could be financial, but it doesn't necessarily need to be financial. It could also be valued by how many people are you able to help, you know, in a positive way. And financially, maybe that's not even a relevant factor for you personally.
Got it.
So in order to be able to prioritize, do the things that you know conceptually are beneficial for your business, not do the things that are that you know conceptually are not helpful for your business. Just because you know that, that doesn't mean that's what you like and dislike. It doesn't, just because you know, if I'm going to sit down now and talk to these five people for the next 3 hours, that's going to be helpful for my business, but that doesn't mean you want to do it. Maybe you don't like talking to these people.
Yeah, true.
So the ability to do things that you know are good for you and your business, but you don't like doing them, is a very important skill. You can now see how the coolness aspect.
That's what I was just about to say. I was like, so
athletes have to do that all the time also. Right? You have the whole time. It's not like that every athlete wants to train 7 hours a day and stretch an hour and go to physical therapy and not eat chocolate and not eat drink alcohol and so forth, right? So the same thing with not doing things that you like doing, but you know they're not helpful for your business or for your performance as an athlete.
Got it.
So that's one parallel for sure already, right? Among many. Another ability you need is the ability to improvise and create, be creative, create in a creative way, let's say.
Yeah.
You can only plan so much, and you need to plan. If you go into a tennis match, if you run a marathon, if you go play the NBA finals, you need to plan. You need to come in with a game plan. You want to launch a business, you need to have a business plan. You need to know what you want to do. You need to have a timeline and so forth. But things are going to happen. Nothing is going to always go exactly the way you planned it.
Yeah, you have to be able to stay loose and be able to improvise as the situations come to you.
Yeah. So those, I would say, are two of the big kind of parallels between athletes, pro athletes, and entrepreneurs. But, you know, when we keep talking this, for sure, a lot more.
So the coolness thing to me seems to be where, like, that to me is like the biggest one, right? Like, you can, I could see how someone can learn how to focus and like do the other two. But coolness to me is the one that breaks most people, right? Because I'm a big basketball fan, right? So I could see, I remember watching like Kobe or Michael Jordan. They get fouled in the middle of a shot, right? They get fouled. It's a clear, obvious foul. The ref doesn't call the foul, but they continue with the same intensity. They miss that shot, but they continue at the same level of intensity. While other players would get the same, they're in the shot, they get fouled, and then they're mad. They're trying to argue with the ref. Come on, ref, you didn't see that. And then that gets them out of their way. And I could see, I personally, being an entrepreneur myself, I've been in situations where certain situations came at me so fast and so heavy. It was like I acted emotionally, right? Like it threw me off my game. Like I wasn't in the middle. I wasn't even keel. I was just like, I was like, this is unpleasurable. I don't like it. And I'm going to react a certain way. Is there an exercise or simple exercise that you can give people that they can learn to kind of keep that cool? Because that seems to be the tougher one, because people tend to go with whatever emotion comes to them.
Yes, yes. Yeah, for sure. So that's a great example, really, that you brought up. So two kind of clarifications, let's say.
Okay.
First, keeping your cool does not mean not being emotional.
Okay.
It doesn't mean having that inner reaction. So when Kobe gets fouled or got fouled and whoever else would get fouled, and you see that they act differently. One is acting emotionally and one not. That doesn't mean that the person that acted cool didn't have the emotional reaction.
Got it. But they decided not to act on it.
They just are able to be cool with their reaction. Mm-hmm. And now they are able to act independently of their reaction. A lot of people think that to be cool means to just be like a blank slate, to be indifferent. Like, I don't care. Like, whatever. Like, no, that's not it. But if that is your reaction, your internal reaction, okay, that sometimes might be helpful, sometimes not.
Yeah.
Emotions are an essential part of a human being. You want to have emotions. You want to be able to be happy. You want to be able to be sad and anxious and motivated and nervous and stressed. Like, you can leverage those things if they don't dictate your behavior. You said that very well. I acted emotionally.
Yeah.
So the acting emotional is the part that is not helpful to you.
Yes. But
being emotional, that is helpful.
Yeah. So because you can use that,
exactly.
Like, okay, they fouled me. I didn't get that shot, but I'm going to use that level of intensity now to come down to court and really put it to them next time. Okay. Got it. So understanding the feeling.
Allow what you're feeling, but now you want to behave independently of how you feel, and you want to behave depending on what you conceptually know and understand to be the best course of action. What is the thing that you can do right now that is most likely going to result in what you want to result in? And a lot of times when somebody acts emotionally, it's the exact opposite. Not always. Sometimes the emotion that we are feeling and the automatic action that we would take are actually the right actions. Mm. And if that's the case, that's great. Then you can still do that, but you're not forced to do that anymore. That's the big difference. If you see somebody being harassed on the street and you feel angry because of it, and you want to intervene because it's safe and appropriate.
Yeah.
Then you can do that and you should do that. So being cool with being angry doesn't mean to not intervene. It means that you have a choice to intervene if you think if it's the right thing to do, and not to intervene and maybe take another course of action if it's not helpful.
Got it. But how is there an exercise that people can practice that, where they can practice being independent of those and then being able to understand, like, all
right. That's where the techniques and strategies come in, that you need to first learn, understand, and then start to practice.
Got it.
So it's not like I just like have thought for now 5 seconds and then this ability to be cooler with something is going to change. Sometimes when you adapt your perspective, that can have a significant impact on you being able to do this better.
Mm-hmm.
But the systematic and consistent approach is really what comes in. So that's where when you do the MindSize program that I have online, this is exactly where you learn that.
Got it. Okay. So you have this specifically dialed down in your program online.
Yes, because with any technique, no matter what technique and strategy you learn, you always, at the foundation of any technique and strategy, are these three skills.
Yeah.
And one of the three skills is coolness.
Yeah.
But you don't practice coolness in isolation.
You have to be in the world.
Because if you practice it in combination with the other two skills, your ability to be cool will improve faster than if you practice only coolness.
Got it. Okay. I understand what you're saying. All of it needs to be together and not separate. And then it can't be just that by itself. Granted, you will elevate it, but not without the combination of everything else.
Yes.
Got it. Okay. That's super interesting. I'm hearing myself and I can hear the audience just saying, so how do you then just understand that that's the emotion that you're having and don't react to it? Because to tell you the truth, mindfulness is a thing that kind of started popping up 15 years ago, right? Like, it's really like starting to become in the zeitgeist of culture. But most of the time, people acted poorly and they would just say that person was in their emotion and just let them act poorly. We teach our kids just to act poorly. Like, people grow up with this. Like, how do they then not act on their emotion or be aware of it and then be able to choose?
I mean, it's basically like asking, what can you do to run a marathon now? Well, nothing. There's nothing that you can do to run a marathon now. You need to start practicing.
You
need this systematic, consistent training program that will last for a while, not a day or a week. And then you have developed these physical skills to a degree where your body is able to run for 42 kilometers without breaking down. And to answer the question now, how can you kind of act independently of the anger that you are feeling? Is you can't right now. There's probably nothing that I can tell you right now that is like the magic. I mean, if there would be, or if there's anybody, place, then like, but that's what I said. Sometimes there's like great teachers. They really like show you a different perspective of like why this is bad for you, why you are acting like this. And like sometimes hearing this has like a really eye-opening effect on people.
Yeah.
And, but even though they might then for some time feel like, oh yeah, I'm angry. I don't have to do it. If they don't start practicing, they will revert back into old habits.
Got it.
So the only way, even if you do change your perspective, you reframe your perspective, you understand now this is not helpful to you. You understand like, oh, I could do this. Without practicing, you won't be able to do it.
Got it. All right. Understood. And this is why I wanted to touch on mindfulness as, you know, in this podcast specifically, because I feel, you know, there's a high failure rate when it comes to entrepreneurship. And a lot of times is because it's not that the person physically couldn't do the business that they started or they couldn't. It just sometimes I think there's a mental breakdown or emotional breakdown that happens during that time that they can't push through, where the point of like they hit the ceiling and they just quit, right? Because culturally it's pushed, you know, you just quit because of that. And I think that's kind of the same thing with athletes. There's a way that people tend to teach them to push through that, while in entrepreneurship, they just tell them like, hey, it's not working out, you know, just quit. Right. And I feel like it's a lot of it is mental, where you get that barrier.
I mean, for sure, a lot is mental because our mind is never not part of anything.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter what you do, right? If you're an athlete, if you're an entrepreneur, if you're just sitting at a desk, looking at a screen, if you're writing something, reading something, if you're running, it's more physical or it's more mental, but like the mental aspect is never not part of it. Okay. You just need to understand that the mental aspect has two parts. One is the intellectual understanding. Mm-hmm. You're using your a part of your brain that's called the default mode network, which is in charge of thinking about the future, thinking about the past, self-rumination, conceptualization, and so forth, right?
That's the part of your brain that just always goes. It's naturally doing what it's supposed to do.
Well, it's the part that kind of conceptualizes and intellectualizes.
Got it, right? Okay.
And that's an important part. It's like what differentiates us and greatly from animals, mm-hmm. right? We can kind of plan. We can think about the future. We can adapt to things. We can understand things and so forth. But that's not the only thing that our brain can do. Then there's also the experiential part of the brain, which is in charge of just experiencing what we are perceiving. Mm. So you can just listen to what I'm saying. Try to pay less attention to your thoughts that are happening when I'm talking. There might be a response. You're like, oh, this is interesting, or that doesn't make any sense, or I don't understand, or oh, this is a good idea, I should ask this next question. Those thoughts might be happening while I'm talking, mm-hmm. but you don't, now you can choose with your ability to focus on what you want. You choose to not focus on that, and instead you only focus on only hearing, and you just listen while there's other sounds happening. So this is your experiential part of the brain, or you're just feeling, or you're just seeing. So that is the part that we are developing with these three skills. And then you're able to take advantage of your default mode network of the intellectual part of the brain, rather than being at its mercy. And like when your mind is kind of
running,
shit hit the fan and it's just going off the rails, then you're like fucked. And like when you develop these three skills, then you're not anymore, because now you have a way to behave independently of what your mind is doing. You don't have to believe everything that your mind is telling you anymore.
Yeah.
You don't have to do everything that you feel like you need to do or you feel like you shouldn't need to do.
Yeah. Right? I could see why you're saying then how much practice that would need, because a lot of the times we've just been programmed to listen to that. hey, I feel upset, act upset, right? Like now you have to learn how to put those two things together. Hey, my mind is telling me I'm upset. Okay, I am upset. Now I have to learn how to choose the reaction I want to have to being upset or being sad or whatever the case may be. Okay, and I could see why you're saying the amount of practice and you need the framework to go into that.
Yes.
Got it.
Okay. A lot of practice.
So you being able to teach this, how much of this have you been able to master and being able to like just keep, I guess, cool, present, the whole thing? How long did it take you to get to that place where you felt like you have a good control over everything?
I will answer that in a couple of different ways. Okay. So just the straightforward answer would be, everything until I really started practicing this systematically doesn't mean that I haven't been practicing it before. Just like you and anybody who's listening, it's not like just because you haven't been practicing these skills in a systematic, consistent way doesn't mean you haven't been practicing them or not using them, right?
Got it. Maybe in isolation.
Depending on the situation you're in, the job you're doing, you have been using those skills. Really, when somebody's listening to this, they their reaction should more be like, oh yeah, duh, of course I have that skill, rather than, what? I've never heard of this. Like, what? I can pay attention to details? That can't be. No, of course you can pay attention to details, right? So, and you have been paying attention to details probably much more when things are interesting to you or when things are important to you. So at your job, right? Mm-hmm. When you are a doctor and you're performing surgery, like you are using those three skills. You are not reacting to your emotions.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean you don't have emotions, right? Yeah. You are paying attention for a very long time. You are noticing the most acute details when you're performing surgery. So those are those three skills.
Okay.
And you have improved them for this specific task. That's why I said at the beginning, these skills are task specific. Because a doctor can stay cool when somebody is like bleeding on his table and there's a good chance that they're going to die. Yeah. Doesn't mean that they're able to stay cool when somebody cuts them off on the intersection.
Got it. Or they go home and their kids are going nuts and they're like, what the hell? Yeah,
exactly.
Okay. Got it.
So that's number one. Number two, I would say, once I started practicing these skills systematically, it took around 5 years to get to a level where I was like, oh, this is very different now. Okay. The being me is now different experience than it was five years ago.
Got it.
Yeah. If I would have had these skills to developed to the level that they are now, and I would have been a tennis player, like things would be vastly different, vastly different.
Got it. Is that because you would have been able to, I guess, control more of just how you reacted
not
to
control.
The game?
I would always be a little with like controlling things. Like you don't want to really. It's not completely wrong. I just would be cautious.
It's not. It's probably
control.
Not the right word. Okay, got it.
Yeah, like you can adjust. Let's just say. But like controlling my emotions, for example, or controlling my mind. I mean, you can try. You know, like the famous experiment, like, okay, like don't think about the pink elephant and don't think about it. And like, where's the control over your mind?
No.
Okay. But you can learn to adjust and you can learn to substitute and so forth. Right. So just depending on what your definition of control is, control might be the right or the wrong word, but control is a big word. That's why I'm just a little cautious. Okay. But basically, where were we? Yeah, once I got to a level where I felt like this is really different, I then decided, okay, this is what I want to help people with.
This is
the main thing. I want to help people develop, help people realize that they're able to develop it and already have it. And in a systematic and consistent way, just the way I have been coaching tennis before, and not in a way that other people do it, which is not bad in any way. There's a lot of people that teach things using stories, in a kind of more non-tangible way. right? And that is also very, very powerful. But there's actually more people that do that than that kind of do what I do now. So not everybody responds to the same teaching or the same experience in the same way, right? So there's a lot of people. So athletes, generally speaking, are more of the straightforward, like, what do I need to do? How do I need to do this? Rather than, you know, like, this is going to be good for you because of this. And like, you feel good and stay calm. And like, you tell them some stories that are very inspirational, but they're not tangible for like the moment that you're in.
Got it. And for the people again, that you're talking
right, wrong.
Yeah, but the people you're talking to specific are tend to be very coachable people, right? Yeah. Athletes tend to be coached their whole lives. They kind of look for, what do I need to do? This. Okay, so that's what your program is more specifically geared towards.
Exactly. My program is just like hands-on. This is what you do. This is why you do it. This is how you do it. And this is how much you do it. And now do it, okay?
And come back.
And when you're not doing it, then bad luck. And if you're doing it, then you take the next step. And then I tell you another thing of how to do, why to do it, when to do it, how much to do it, and then you need to do it. And when you're doing it, you keep kind of stepping up, right?
Okay, got it. All right, cool. Definitely understood. Thank you so much for that clarification. So I'm going to wrap it up really soon. This is the three questions I kind of always ask everybody towards the end of the podcast. There's somebody right now, they're dying a slow death. They're working a job they hate. They're kind of doing something they don't really love to do, but they have to do it, right? Because they have to pay bills or whatever, but they want to take that leap to being an entrepreneur. They want to go on that side. What advice would you give that person?
You know, because I realize like there's so many people in the world that because of the life situation that they're in, it's just very challenging.
To
change what they need, that they want to do.
Yeah.
A lot of times the issue is that people don't know what they love, you know? So you need to start to explore what is it that you love. Okay. That might be it actually. This is my answer. So if you find what you love to do, what you're really passionate about, if the passion is intense enough, then there's a high probability that your motivation will shift. The fear of not succeeding, the fear of not being able to provide, or this or this happening, or this not happening, will all of a sudden be diminished to a degree, and you will be thinking and envisioning and feeling what you want to be doing. You will be looking so much forward to doing this thing that you're passionate about and love doing, that it's not going to be as fearful for you anymore.
Got it.
And then, of course, when you do something that you don't do for money, but you do it because you love it, it's your favorite thing to do in the world, then generally what will happen is you will do it a lot, right? You will think about it. You will research it. You will practice it. You will talk to your friends and family about it. Mm-hmm. And you will just be occupied with it all day. Every free minute, you will do it because you love it so much, right? Yeah. Free minute means like not every second. You have your family, you have your kids, you have whatever you need to do. But every minute that you don't have to do those things, and those might also be things that you enjoy very much, you will do this other thing.
Yeah.
And if you do something all the time that you really enjoy, you're really passionate about, it's not work for you at all, you're just doing what you love all the time, and you do it all the time, you will get better at it.
Yeah.
You will get very, very good at it. And when you're very good at something, you'll always be able to make money with it. There's people that are able to make money with things where you're like, what? You can make money with that?
Yeah.
It's like, yeah, if you're one of the best in the world at that, you will be able to make a living.
I found a lot of them and put them on a podcast. I've had people who sell used shoes that they buy from Goodwill. They're making $700,000 a year selling used shoes, but they love shoes so much that they found a way to make a business out of it.
Yeah.
And, you know, funny you say that love thing. I actually gave somebody some advice maybe 2 months ago. I was like, just think about what you do regularly, and then also look at your explore page on all these things that you consume content on, right? Like, if you love cars, you're going to consume car content on Instagram or TikTok or whatever, right? Like the content that you consume usually is because of the thing that you really love doing anyway. If you like riding bikes, you're going to consume that content. So you can almost see a parallel of the things that you're consuming as a person looking at it also in your regular life as well. I always tell them, like, just look at what you're already consuming and what you're doing. So if you like cars and you're playing tinkering in your garage in a car, but then on your Instagram explore page, it's all cars, then there goes your thing. You know, it's very easy to see now because you consume a lot of what you like.
That is definitely a great tip.
Yeah.
But also I think there's things that you might enjoy very much that you can't consume digitally very much. Or if True. You do consume them digitally, it's not even in the same ballpark.
Yeah.
For example, there's people that love hiking, you know, when they go up mountain, like 10,000, 15,000 feet in one day, they take crazy tours. Mm-hmm. Until a little while ago, you couldn't make a living off of that, except you were a professional athlete. And now with digital media, YouTube and everything, there's a whole bunch of people that kind of share their experiences and
just giving
in
tours
in such a good way that people kind of pay for online content to kind of see, you know, be able to do research on that. And just because you love running for a long time or you love being in nature.
Yeah.
So I think there's a lot of different ways and a lot of ways that nobody has figured out yet. You know, that's the beauty of everything. I mean, look at TikTok. Who would have thought a couple of years of TikTok that like people dancing in front of the camera for 30 seconds is going to generate 20 million followers, you know?
And then companies pay you huge money to dance to their stuff.
Who knows what's, you know, what the next person that is listening to this is going to be like, I'm going to figure out, you know, X, Y, and Z. And it's just going to be, you know, amazing.
Yeah. Yeah, I tell my mom, I was like, you stopped my video gaming career. I could have been a video gamer.
Yeah, I mean, I know a bunch of people that are successful.
Professional video gamers,
right?
Exactly. Yeah, it's one of those things. So I'm going to wrap with the last question I ask absolutely everybody, right? The name of the show is H for Hustle. What does hustle mean to you?
Hustle means for me what we kind of discussed at the beginning. It's like being creative and nimble, being able to work with challenges, you know, not giving up and not necessarily going with your head through the wall, but like flowing around, like being like water, like Bruce Lee said, you know, you have your North Star and you're going to get there. And there's going to be a lot of rocks and stones in the way. And hustling would be kind of the water finding its way to the North Star.
I love that. That's awesome. If people want to, you know, get your program, where can they go to join your program, your 8-week program?
So that's mindsizesports.com. You can find that on the website or Instagram. It's both the same. You can follow me on Instagram, straka.la. And then on our website, there's a lot of information. It's freely accessible to anybody to, of course, go through everything. If you read through the whole program description, probably most of your questions are going to be answered. There's also going to be a free intro, so you can already start practicing for free. And then for anybody who doesn't have the financial means to actually do the program, but would really like to do it, I always say, please feel free to reach out to us, write us an email, explain your situation. And I don't want to not give access to anybody who wants to develop these skills just because they're not able to afford it.
Got it. That's awesome. And I will link all of that down in the description down below. So if you guys make sure you go to his website if you really want that program. And if you don't have the means, feel free to reach out. Christian, thank you so much for being in the show. And thank you so much for dropping the knowledge bomb that you dropped today.
Thank you so much. Thank you for having me.
And just like that, another illustrious episode is in the can. Man, I would love to know what you guys think of today's episode. Please hit me up on social media and let me know what you guys thought of today's episode. And I'm going to wrap it up like I always wrap it up with, guys, from the quote from the late, great Nipsey Hussle. The quote goes, "This game will test you. Never fold. Stay 10 toes down because it's not on you. It's in you. And what's in you, they can't take away." That's it, guys. Peace. Boom.